welcome to James Bond Complex. My name is Matt.
I'm Edgar.
I'm and Jason.
Today we are talking. We're actually in Toronto still today. We just came back yesterday from Operation Snowfall, aka Skyfall in concert. And you know, we're gonna talk about it, I guess.
Yes.
Our first impressions.
Yeah, first impression. I mean, it's been a long weekend.
But a fun one.
More than fun.
The operation was a success.
I had a great time. Jason, you had a great time?
Absolutely, I had a great time.
Well, actually, mind you, if the sound quality is a little bit off, it's just because we're in a coffee shop. We're actually in the same coffee shop where we recorded a year and a half and some change after seeing Casino Royale. Right? It's becoming our spot next to the CN Tower. So if you're ever in Toronto and you're at the CN Tower, near the CN Tower, at a second cup at the...
across the CBC.
But that's the convention center. That's the unofficial James Bond Complex Toronto coffee shop.
It's our studio here.
It's our Toronto studio. So we just arrived on Friday. Some people arrived on Thursday. I don't remember the name. I'm going to refer to other podcasts, probably not by necessarily all of their names, their first name. Some of the I just remember the their handle, but I think it's Budget Bond was there since Thursday.
Corey Kraft.
I'm sorry?
Corey Krabs.
I was there with his lovely wife. She's actually an Acadian. She was happy to talk to me in French a little bit. It's a cute accent.
Well, she's dropped some French, I think, in the Dr. No episode or something like that.
Yeah, I'll be honest, I haven't listened to their show yet. I've been following their page. I meant to, but, you know.
There's a lot of content out there.
Yeah, there's a lot of content, and we have a lot of content to produce. So I haven't listened to them, but they've been there since Thursday. Most people came in Friday during the day. We came in. No, our story is that we're supposed to take the train on Friday. But if you know anything about Canada right now, we have a little crisis because of the train. There's some protests. I don't want to know the politics, but it personally messed with our schedules. We had to improvise. The entire week, we were looking at the situations. Like, I think they were going to be okay. Oh, they're reactivating the line in Quebec and Southern Ontario. I think we're going to be, we're not going to be okay. We had to take different means of transportation.
Yeah, that's comfortable.
I was fine.
Yeah.
You Jason's often fine. You're often fine, Jason. Jesus. You're also fine, Jason. Also fine.
You guys are too kind. Actually, speaking of kind, everyone was kind this weekend.
Yeah, let's talk about, enough about our trials and tribulations getting here. Let's talk about the actual weekend itself. It was just a weekend that will long live, I believe, in our memories and in our hearts, just for the number of people that showed up to the bars and the lunches and the show itself, and the camaraderie, as you've been saying all weekend long, Jason, the camaraderie that exists in this community. I know other platforms have mentioned it. David's mentioned it. Joe has mentioned it. A lot of platforms do, but this was maybe one of the first few times where us three saw it,
the
massive scale, the scale at which it's actually a reality, and that was really impressive and reassuring.
And, if you go online, there's a picture of all of us in the stairs. I mean, we met
at Meridian Hall.
Meridian Hall. It was so many people, and then like, it's so great to see everyone dressed up to the nines, excited, talking about Bond after the show, before the show. Almost during the show. I mean, there was an intermission where I was like, did you notice that part? Did you notice? Did you notice that thing? Everyone's like super jazzed about the movie and the experience of listening to the concert.
Everybody was very well dressed, too.
Everyone was.
Our official sponsor, Alain Dupetit, served as well. Shipped by Univex.
Shipped by Univex. International Corporation.
And I felt like because the new movie's coming up 5 weeks from now.
Yeah.
For UK, not North America. I think the conversation was much more geared, at least the one-on-one intimate conversations were a lot more geared towards No Time to Die than Skyfall itself. I'd say it's 60-40. not the exact numbers.
We couldn't help ourselves, though.
We couldn't help ourselves. I mean, as much as I love my experience of watching Skyfall again, everyone was like, did you hear this about No Time? Do you think this is going to happen? Oh, have you noticed this? Oh, I heard this. It's just rampant.
I think that's... I love that because in a lot of British pubs, that's always a very general conversation that goes on a...
Every night.
It is their version of hockey, I feel. Something
when
that
they're not when they're not brawling each other over football or their Premier League championships or UEFA, they're having a cordial time discussing James Bond. I had that when I was in Edinburgh and London, and it was good to see done on the state side, on the other side of the Atlantic.
Yeah, absolutely, and there's so many people showed up. I mean, I could list the names, but I mean, Joe, we have David, we have Harris, we have Kyle, we have John Broughton, we have Joe Silock, we met Nick, we met Jerome, we met Lloyd, we met Darren, saw Jeff again, we saw Alex,
we
saw
Jeff's
Bill,
wife.
We met Jess O'Shannon, Ryder, Bill, we saw Bill again, jeez Louise, who am I not?
You have a better memory. I know a few of the Andals, and I'm like,
We're sitting with Lee Bolden. Yeah. That guy's really nice, though.
Yeah, he was really cool.
Extremely complimentary.
Which one?
Lee Bolden.
Lee Bolden was amazing. Yeah. I had such... Well, he was sitting next to me the entire time. He was such a gentleman.
Danish, who sort of showed up at the end.
Lee was telling me not to go up to Liverpool. He's like, oh, F Liverpool, Manchester. I was like, I want to go to the Peaky Blinders set. No, because I had already been there. He's like, oh, yeah, you don't need to go there again. I was like, I like Peaky Blinders. Like, oh, you're fine, go.
I mean, it was such an incredible... Oh, and everyone's just so nice.
And everyone was in a good mood.
Everyone, well, especially, it's
hard.
Especially at the party.
Let's not go there. But
no, but everyone's like, you know, people are talking, chatting. Nobody got sloppy drunk, just overly excited and passionate. That's what I like. There was no embarrassing drunk. Nobody threw up. Nobody got into a fight. So it was just a love. It was a love fest.
It's very responsible.
Most of us are grown-ups, adults.
Yeah.
I think the youngest one, I think, is still Aris. Aris is still probably the baby. It's the baby.
He carried himself well, though.
Yeah.
He pulled it off. He kept his tip up.
Just a tip.
So, do we want to start talking about our impressions of the concert?
Yeah, who's the most musically talented of all the three of us? I think it's you, Jason. You studied violin.
I'll start this off.
The floor is yours.
I like this concert. This is my third film in concert. Casino with you guys was the first. Empire was my second. This is my third. And musically, I like this one the most out of the three of us.
Okay.
Out of the three of them, because I didn't realize how much the strings were incorporated into the Bond score or Thomas Newman scores and the renditions of the Bond themes, so I'll give you an example. It's like, you know, the Shanghai scene when it's just vibrant sound. Since I played the violin, I looked at the violinist's fingers and they were going to the high pitched string notes, and I was like, are they doing that? And I was like, yes, they are doing that, because I know how to play the violin, so that's what I liked about it, is like looking at how the violinists were playing and the cellist as well too. And there are other sounds and all the brass sounds. I was like, is that a French horn or a trumpet or a trumpet? And I got it right. And another instrument that really surprised me in this concert was the shaker cymbals in the back.
Yeah, I noticed that. Like, I was looking at, and I was noticing that somebody was doing something. I knew there was a guitarist. It's only at the end I saw where that person was standing, because you hear the.
Wait, so there was a guitarist. I didn't see that.
But there was, but he was hidden far in the back. You couldn't see him.
Okay, I completely missed it. But thank you for verifying that.
And then, you're welcome.
And then when the Adele's theme started playing in the credits scene, I heard the keyboard or the piano. It wasn't a piano, but a keyboard that played like a piano. And to see that the violinists and no instruments were playing, just hearing the piano or keyboard playing, I really appreciated that, because like, I was able to recognize, like, oh, where's the music coming from, or what's the source of the music score in this part of the orchestra. And then,
so for
me, being a former musician, recognizing where the sources were, I really appreciated that.
Oh, it was, I have no sense of rhythm. I don't know the lingo or music. I don't know any music theory. I only experience music as the way any human being is able to appreciate it. It's just how I feel about it. So what immediately jumped at me is the nervousness of the music. I never noticed that how stringy that score was, and now everyone's like seems to have Parkinson. The way the musicians move, it's very nervous and creates tension.
The notes change very quickly. They have to keep them.
It's like the subway scene when he discovers silver and then they start running. That's when like the violinists were going to the high pitch, and what we call like what you described, Parkinson. That's we vibrate. My violinists vibrate on the strings to create a more echo or more high pitch echo. So
okay,
and I was like, are they gonna do that? Being a formal, I was like, yes, they are doing that.
They did it. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
The more you know.
But you noticed it.
I heard it before, but seeing it produced, I can't explain it. Just it made and it's just it's creates tension, but it's also it's angsty. The music, the score is very angst ridden, and I think it worked with the malaise that James Bond has in that movie. He's very unsure of his role in the universe because he's been hurt. He's not operating at full capacity until the end of the movie, when he's able to like shoot and aim properly again. And
exactly.
So it was interesting to see the music reflects the way the character feels, and there was some variations here and there, but mostly it was the way that people play the music that I really noticed this time. Edgar, thoughts and feelings?
What intrigued me, is, and much like the last time with Casino Royale, were those variations, especially with the Skyfall score. When you listen to the Skyfall score, there's a lot of instrumentation, obviously, but there's also a little bit of, there's some post-recording, work going on, I find. I feel I can hear that in the score. Being there live with a full orchestra, I always like paying attention to when, like, oh, how is that going to sound live with these instruments? And one of the pleasures I had last night were the Shanghai, where he's following Patrice on into the tower building.
With the electronic sound.
Well, there's a lot of drum going on there. It gave that track a bit of a beat that I don't feel it has on the album. I like that a lot.
That's the thing.
It's fine. Go ahead.
But I think that because it's played live, there's some calibration that usually you hear, and they can make the sound, usually the sound the way they want, control the pitches and everything. But because it's played live, it doesn't. It's not as manipulated as changing.
Yeah.
So it's a different experience.
It is. It's the music we know, but it just sounds a little bit different, but not worse.
And in some of the action scenes, such as when the first wave of attack happens at Skyfall, like I love the percussion, because like just like we were, the theme of this recording, we're talking about how did they come up with the musical sound of that, and just hearing the percussion. None of the violins were playing at the time. Eventually, they came into it, and I really appreciated that.
And one of the highlights for me, and I know a few people at the after party were talking about it, was the major synth that kicks in just as Silva is dying. What do we think about that?
I
I initially thought that was a faux pas, but I thought it worked, and then I was like, did this happen? But my initial thought was, is it a faux pas, and did it happen in the movie? I just don't, because
I'm going to assume it's probably in the movie, but because of the sound mix in for the film itself, it's probably very low, very barely noticeable, but because it's played live, you hear it, and it's just, what the hell?
I know, and
I didn't mind it, it just surprised me.
Yeah. It was very surprising. Full disclosure, I loved it, and since last night, there's a different version of that score that's playing in my head, and whenever Silva's on screen, there's just a couple notes there. It was really cool. I like that a lot. It was awesome.
I like that, and another instrument that I really paid attention to, even though I couldn't see it, was like when the, I guess it's the funeral songs, so like when M first sees the coffins, and when M dies, and you see Bond at the top of Whitehall, like, I really, none of the violins were playing, but I was like, oh, is that a French horn? And then when he stood up, I was like, yes, it is a French horn. There are the only brass instruments that I saw last night were French horn and trumpet, no trombones or saxophones or anything like that. I think there are a couple oboes or clarinets, but no flutes. But to know and verify that it was the French horn or trumpet for those scenes, it made me put a grin on my face.
The horns, I thought the horns really knocked it out of the park last night. Yeah. They sounded absolutely stunning. In fact, I like the Skyfall score. It's good. Funnily enough, one of the weaknesses of that score, in my book anyways, is the few times when Thomas Newman really goes for the Bond theme. It's fine. I don't think it's great. But last night, man, did that Bond theme ever sound fantastic.
Especially the DB5 reveal.
Oh, jeez.
I was going to say, actually, the DB5's destruction.
Oh, that too.
That too. Like, I always get a kick when that car gets blown up and cracks the action.
But speaking of the DB5 destruction, that's when I love the French horn just like, da-na,
oh yeah, oh it's da-na. Great.
And then none of the violins were playing, and I was so happy, I was like, I'm able to recognize the source.
That's one thing, they really toned down the sound effects and the voice, which is something they didn't do for Casino Royale. They had subtitles, which I thought was a brilliant idea, because it forces you to pay more attention to music, because I think the mix for Casino Royale is a little bit different.
We're seeing Casino Royale in a couple of weeks, so it'll be interesting to see if
might
they
be
do
they might have changed it since, but yeah, from what I remember, it was the sound mix was not as toned down. It was pretty fit. Like, it sounded almost like the movie itself. You didn't pay as much attention to the concert part as we did last night.
Oh yeah, and then I also think because the subtitles were there, because you know they're in the lower part of the screen, you also look at the orchestra at the same time.
Sure, that's you're right.
Good point, actually. Yeah.
I've seen Skyfall many, many times, so I really try to focus on the orchestra a lot, because you're having played the violin. And
like I said, you aren't meant to talk about music, because I know Jingle Bells and that by all flute. That's about
it. I'm by no means a musician, but like just from my experience. And another scene that I think during the entire movie, the only time that I didn't pay attention to the orchestra and had to focus on the screen was the Skyfall attack.
It's such an exciting sequence. It's hard to not.
Because like every other scene, I was paying attention to the orchestra. I mean, yeah, like when Silva and Bond are talking, well, there's no music, so I'm paying attention to the screen. But like,
but I think seeing a movie like that is honestly, it's almost like a class in not filmmaking it per se, but the effect of a soundtrack. It is a very, you know, as an editor, I've seen, like, you know, I've seen audio tracks, and I've seen a movie sort of decomposed, and seeing a movie this way makes a neophyte understand certain notions of filmmaking that you wouldn't in any other way. So that was quite interesting. I would be surprised to know what a kid, like a 12-year-old kid, would think of an experience like that. Like I would actually, if there's ever, I have a baby nephew that's only a couple months old, but let's say in 12 years and there's another concert, I might bring him in just to like make him watch a Bond movie, but also experience an orchestra, because I think people don't, people are going to see a band, but they don't necessarily go to see classic music, yeah, symphony. So I'm like, this is a way to introduce, it's like introduction to classic music, which is, it's interesting. And we saw all people of all walks of life. There were us dressed in tuxedos, but I saw people in jeans and t-shirts and hoodies.
Yeah.
Not everyone. Like the music is for everyone. Like as much as I appreciate people taking effort in dressing up, like to be honest, it is meant to for the common folks also. I like it when people put the effort too.
This whole project of projecting a film in a concert hall with a live orchestra is really gaining in popularity quite significantly over the past few years. I mean, just a few days ago, I don't know if I mentioned it to you, Jason, in the middle of the week, by the time this is released, probably a week ago, I saw the 1920s version of Ben-Hur in a church with a small orchestra. There were just four or five players, but again, it's you do get a different feel for cinema when there are live musicians that are almost telling the story as the projection is going along at the same time. And I got that feeling again at the last night with Skyfall, despite the fact that we've seen the movie so many times. You do get a sense that there are people with you in the room doing their part in the moment, telling the story. It really lends a different perspective to, as Bond would say, it really lends perspective to the filmmaking experience.
It does.
And I have one question for you guys. Did watching, not the score itself, but watching this film in concert, did it give you any additional thoughts, feelings towards this film of Skyfall as a whole?
I think...
Or did it remind you why you liked it or didn't like it or whatever?
Now, the last couple of weeks have been very interesting for me personally. There's a podcast that, on Her Majesty's Secret Podcast, one of my favorites. They're great guys. I love them. I interact with them on Twitter every now and then. They're good people. Well, we send the Rookie Agents show sometimes. But the regular show launched their Skyfall review. And they have their reasons, they're very well argued. They don't like Skyfall. So that was kind of an interesting perspective to listen to an episode where neither of the two hosts really care for Skyfall that much. Last week, I saw a private screening of the movie. I saw it again last night. And I think what I appreciate is I like having this movie where the bad guy really does always feel one step ahead. As good as James Bond is, I mean, hey, James Bond is the best, right? In Skyfall, he's just, even at the end of the movie, he's still one step slower. So there's this, I think, to answer your question, I have a newfound appreciation for the, I think you said malaise of the character in the film,
yeah.
And there's a part of that, but the character of Silva projects a malaise over the entire story. I feel it's, you just have this sense that I'm not sure if this one's gonna end well. And it makes for an interesting viewing experience. And I think it hit me last week and it hit me last night as well. And I like that spin on the movie much more so than maybe I used to. So, what about you?
I like your perspective on that, Edgar. Now, when I was rewatching Skyfall last night, and I thought, you know, I had the notion of this, you know, throughout all my viewings, but watching Skyfall, it made me. What I really liked about it is how Sam Mendes showed Bond as a government employee of Her Majesty's government, that a government agent and a. Than just a swashbuckling adventure agent as Roger Moore was. Nothing wrong with that, but I thought the movie in itself had its two halves, like where the first half is you see the meat of MI6 and how the British government operates, and the second half is once Silva is introduced, we get thrown into the flamboyance of the tropes of James Bond.
The Prime Minister continues to express public support for MI6, while the opposition has taken the position
we're a bunch of antiquated bloody idiots fighting a war we don't understand and can't possibly win.
Look, three of my agents are dead already. Don't embroil me in politics now.
The Prime Minister's ordered an inquiry. You'll have to appear.
Oh, standing in the stocks at midday. Who's antiquated now?
For Christ's sake, listen to yourself. We're a democracy and we're accountable to the people we're trying to defend. We can't keep working in the shadows. There are no more shadows.
You don't get this, do you? Whoever's behind this, whoever's doing it, he knows us. He's one of us. He comes from the same place as Bond. The place you say doesn't exist. The shadows.
Very good, Matthew.
Sure, you're more or less talking about the intermission of point that breaks the movie, because the movie cuts, I don't know if it's a spoiler, but...
spoilers for Skyfall in concert.
It cuts right about the one where they get to a Selva's Island. That's where the cutoff point, really. You have their little 20-minute intermission to go to the bathroom. The thing that I noticed about Sam Bend is the two picture is the... Because, you know, every director brought something to the movie. I mean, you think about Lewis Gilbert. Lewis Gilbert was more, I feel...
Epic
feel, but it was sort of forgetful. There's key information that he keeps forgetting in these movies that you should be introduced earlier or more. It's sloppy sometimes. So is Guy Hamilton. Guy Hamilton did trick photography. He zooms in and shots. He's a messy director. And the thing that I noticed with Sam Mendes is that it's the artistry. And not just when I say artistry, it is the level of, you know, he references paintings. There's a shot, you know, one of the last shots of the movie when after Silva's dead and Bond's traveling, and you see Kincaid in the background, and the camera pulls back. It almost looks like a Rembrandt painting. It's really Charles Crusoe lit, very faintly lit. There's a multiple reference to classic art. I mean, he goes to the art museum and there's a painting, and it's right in your face, and it's a theme about the movie. It's an old ship being taken out to pasture, which is a theme. Like there's a macro element to Skyfall. It's not only about Bond as an aging agent, it's also the franchise just turning 50 years old. It's a bit dusty, and then I have to check that out, because now the painting that's being sold, that where Patrice kills the guy,
yeah.
I have to know more about that painting, because I think it's also in It Chapter 2. It's a really, sort of a deformed woman. It might be. It seems.
Okay.
I need to know more, because there's probably, you didn't put these elements just, oh, it looks nice. It means something. Even in Spectre, people have issues, but there's a level of artistry and thematic elements that you've never seen in Bond movies. Bond movies are sometimes, you know, I love License to Kill, but it's a License to Kill is an action movie. There's not that much depth to it. Like it is what it is. As much as I love it, there's not like levels of artistry. And something I also noticed, I think there's some foreshadowing. I don't know how much. Because there's a lot of, you see skulls, like Day of the Dead skulls every time you see Silva's computer. Yeah. So I'm like, that's something that Sam Mendes was already fixated on in 2012 that he kept brought back for Spectre. So that's the thing I noticed, the artistry, the level, I can't describe it, but there's really...
The perfectionism.
Not perfectionism, like classic art. There's Sam Mendes is a full-fledged artist. He's not a film nut. He's a theater director. He's a theater nut. He's a, you know, there's something. He brought the artist in to sing the song, and he brought them in. They were integral to the creative process, which I find fascinating. As somebody who's hence sees themselves a little bit of an artiste, I appreciate that. I appreciate that there's a little bit more. It's not Marvel movie that is sugar-coated and made to be, like, it's not McDonald's. If you find the recipe for Bond, like, people complain about Spectre, but Spectre is, it's a rich movie. It's not fully cohesive as a narrative, but it is visually, it is smart, it is well-acted, it's professionally made, the picture. It's not a sloppy, dumb superhero movie. It is well constructed visually. It is smartly edited.
Everything you just said is why you made a Photoshop picture of me that says Sam Mendes equals genius.
Oh, I know he's one of your favorite directors, and I saw 1917. I thought it was brilliant. Like going to war. I was mentally exhausted after seeing that movie, but I think it's meant to be exhausting. You're not meant to go, yeah, I'm going to enjoy. I needed like time to chill out.
My next Sam Mendes venture is potentially going seeing the Lehman trilogy on Broadway, because I heard it's very well acted.
Sure, he still directs plays. I forget.
Yeah. I mean, he won a Tony Award last year. So, like,
Sam Mendes is a genius.
He knows what he's doing.
Sam Mendes, like, you know, people, I'm happy that Parasite won Oscars, but, like, I like 1917 just as much as you did. And I know some people were kind of irked by it not winning, but I said Roger Deakins winning validated a movie because, like, that movie's known for its single track shot. And I said Sam Mendes doesn't need anything more in life. Think about it. His very first movie he made in life, American Beauty, he won all the Oscars.
I remember. He was in film school back then. I remember.
His first British film was Skyfall, and not only was it the first British film he made, it's still the highest grossing British film up to date.
I think it even beat Thunderball.
It beat Thunderball, Inflation Accounted. So he already has, and he won his BAFTA at 1917. He won a Tony Award, and he just got knighted by Queen Elizabeth. So he has achieved everything a director can do in a lifetime. So he doesn't need anything more. Sam Mendes equals genius, like you said.
He's set for life, I think.
Yeah.
And that movie just looked like the effects. It's the type of effect. We're going to segue a little bit on 1917, but that's the type of effect that I like. It's invisible. It's not a purple giant monster.
Yeah.
It's a storytelling tool, which is brilliant.
The effects in that movie are great.
And they're mostly invisible. That's what it means. Like, obviously, in your mind, you know it's impossible to.
And you know, 1917, all those battlegrounds were filmed in the same place in England, in Surrey, England, where Skyfall was filmed.
Also the same place where they shot the rhythm section.
Exactly.
The recycling theme is back.
Back to the movie. Do we have anything to add about the experience? I'm personally
experience or the film?
The film, the experience.
One more thing. While we're talking about Sam Mendes and Skyfall as a whole, one of the things that this movie has gotten a lot of praise for is, for the first time in history, the characters were able to do something they've never done, which is aging.
And dying.
And dying.
Some characters.
And when I told this to a lot of the Bond community members last night, they were actually pretty surprised by this. The fact is, Judi Dench had more screen time in Skyfall alone than Desmond Llewellyn did in 17 out of the 19 films he did combined.
It's true.
And so you take Skyfall and those other six films that she did, Judi Dench's M is the second most prolific character in the entire Bond franchise after James Bond.
That is true.
Well deserved. I mean, Dame Judi Dench, is such a wonderful actress. I mean, I've seen some of her other work other than her as M, but I'm not going to pretend that she's not in my mind. Oh, you say Judi Dench. Oh, no, I don't think about him. Of course I think about him. And I think she's my M. God bless Bernard Lee. God bless Robert Brown. Ray Fiennes. I love him.
Or Edward Fox.
Well, maybe less so.
She's my M, too.
Yeah, I think she's my M.
I think it's our age, because we're all in our 30s, and that's the one we grew up on.
Yeah.
But also, I mean, she's a god. Damn good actress, and
she knows how to carry scenes. I mean, she's
that the other ones didn't know how to carry scenes, but the role was written for her, with her in mind. It was tailored to her strength. And it just, and she was integral to the making of the movies.
Oh yeah, because like when she was first announced to play M, because it was the first time a female actress had played M in franchise history back in 95, that's when the real MI6 hired their first Stella Remington was her name, and she didn't look, she also had short hair, so, but not exactly a Judy Dench doppelganger, but close enough.
Close enough. Now she, you know, it's, and the movie is all, it's her movie.
Oh, yeah.
Skyfall is about her. Like,
she
the
is,
song.
She is the Bond girl of the movie.
The song's about her. That's something that I appreciate. Because you look at the two previous songs, you know my name? Okay, it's about Bond, but it's very generic. Another Way to Die, I don't know what who sings, who's supposed to be. It's really awkward, that song.
It's just a generic Bond song.
Yeah. It's very generic. And since then, all of them have been consciously designed
for the story.
And I really appreciate the effort. I think it's all thanks to Sam Mendes, actually. He changed the game for that. Because other people have done it, but almost accidentally, I feel. This one was
very intentional.
They brought her in. I think the movie was being written, and they had her in mind, and brought her. And it's, you know, they told her basically, from what I understood, that, you know, don't try and write a Bond song, but write about what you know. And it's a bittersweet song. It's, you know, it's about the M.
Yeah.
And I think she was going through a divorce when she wrote, or.
This is the end.
And, yeah, no, she's her relationship. Like, I know she's been divorced since. She had a kid, and I don't know all the detail, but I think she put.
And while we're on the M topic, I still remember to this day my feeling after coming out of Skyfall. You know, like, everything that is old is new again, because we get reintroduced to the old War Office sets.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I think the casting of Ralph Fiennes as M was a very brilliant choice that Sam Mendes pulled off, because if you're going to replace Judi Dench, replace it with someone who's similarly classically trained and can hold a presence, but also knows their time, also knows their limit to not chew up too much screens, and Ralph Fiennes was a perfect choice for that.
You know, I think I knew that M was going to die in the movie. I did not know she was being replaced by his character. I still remember there's a scene where Tanner and Q are sort of looking at Bond's transit, and you see him coming in, and he's got the bullet wound and the shirt's torn, and you don't see one of his hands. He's like, "What are you doing?" I'm like, "Oh, he's gonna shoot Tanner and Q." Every time I see that scene, I'm like, "Oh my God, he's gonna oh no, oh no, oh." I thought he was going to be a secret villain or something.
No, because a lot of people did, because, like, you know, he was Voldemort up to that point.
Yeah,
Harry Potter, because Harry Potter 8 had come out the year before, and he's been known for playing villains for 20 years. Like, well, you know,
he's the worst villain in the history of movies. He's Amon
Goth.
Yeah, yeah.
He's Amon Goth, or he played Red Dragon in Red Dragon.
Yeah, I was going to say this.
Yeah. And so, like, I remember the casting of Ralph Fiennes. People are like, "Oh, is he gonna be Blofeld?" Because he was balding at the time too.
Well, he's still balding.
Yeah. And then I was like, "But Javier Bardem's there," so I was like, "So are they gonna really have two villains?" And Ralph Fiennes was very, very hush hush about his role in Skyfall. Like, every interview, he said no comment. And even during the press release announcement of Skyfall in 2011, Sam Mendes purposely told Ralph Fiennes not to come.
Okay.
He brought everybody, but he says he told Ben Whishaw and Ray Fiennes to not come because, like, he wanted a little bit of a surprise for their characters.
Interesting. It's funny.
And he didn't invite Albert Finney because, like, they wanted to keep his character. But
Albert Finney was at the end. He passed away fairly recently. He was not the.
This was his final film he made.
Sure.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, it was. I kind of like his character. He's not a character from the Fleming books, but Sam, like, feels like a Fleming character.
Which is funny, because the whole Skyfall thing is totally made up.
It's not in the books.
It's not in the books, but they really pull it off. It feels authentic, and that gets another testament to the quality.
It feels more Fleming than Bond. Like, you know, I mean, it feels like the actual Fleming. something from Fleming Estate. Yeah. That's, he put a lot of himself in Bond. He was the, he had a giant inheritance, and that feels more Fleming than Bond. I don't know if that makes sense.
No, yeah. Absolutely does.
Well, if it feels more Fleming than Bond, then there's a lot of Fleming in Bond. It all comes around. It all makes sense.
It's all about Fleming and everything in between.
Yeah. Skyfall's a good representative. Yeah.
You know, you just... Also, Silva, the one thing that hurt me, and I hadn't seen the movie in a couple of years, to be honest with you, Silva's deformation. When he removes this thing, it really hurt me that the CGI was really not up to par. It's really too overly, like, I'm like, they could have done something either more realistic.
Like prosthetic, sort of?
Yeah, a real prosthetic.
I still like that scene.
Mr. Silva. You're going to be transferred to Belmarsh Prison, where you'll be remanded in custody until the Crown Prosecution Service deem you fit to stand trial for...
Say my name. Say it. My real name. I know you remember it.
Your name is on the memorial wall of the very building you attacked. I would have it struck off. Soon, your past will be as non-existent as your future. I'll never see you again.
Do you know what it does to you? Hydrogen cyanide? Look upon your world, Mala.
It's too overly designed. It looks like he looks like Two-Face.
I kind of like
the idea, but I wish it looked not. It's comic booky. I wish it was. It would really look like it's. It looks like somebody is doing a cartoon on his face.
Well, you gotta remember, Bond villains are supposed to be like kind of. Be caricatures or.
I know. Just that aesthetically, there's something.
You're the artist here, so yeah, I'm listening to you.
There's something missing. It's too cartoonish for the movie. Like, it looks like a drawing. It looks like something that Jim Lee would have drawn. It looks like cartoon scar, and it doesn't look like an actual deformation. Like, if I remove part of your cheek, it wouldn't necessarily create this little indentation. It would sink in. You would be.
But
like,
the eye
is okay, but it's really in the cheek that I find it should be. It is an effective moment when the first time you see it, but it loses its impact on repeat viewings, I find.
Oh, okay.
It's the better way of explaining my
feelings. I think Javier Bardem's just complete flamboyance in the role.
He's great.
What stole the show in this film.
He's still all his little...
Yeah.
MI6.
I remember I was at the private screening from last week. I don't know if I was telling this to either of you two. But we brought a buddy of mine, who Matthew knows, came, and it was his first time watching the movie in a few years, and he loved it, had a great time watching the movie, and one of his comments was, you know, everybody's doing a bang-up job, this movie's fine on all cylinders, there's nothing bad about this movie. And then there's Javier Bardem, which is just so much beyond everything else. That's sort of his takeaway from the movie, and I kind of agree. Everybody is doing excellent work, and then there's Javier Bardem. It's like, it's really one of those movies.
I think he's my favorite Bond villain up to date so far.
The modern era? I mean, this is Le Chiffre.
No, I still take... I mean, I like...
You're going to throw Mads Mikkelsen under the bus? Are you, Jason? You're meeting the man in a few... You're meeting the man, right?
Yeah, and then he's going to eat me.
He's going to be pissed if he hears this.
And he's going to probably cook me up like in Hannibal.
Yeah.
Which is filmed right here in Toronto, by the way.
True.
He'll be cooking you at a restaurant.
Maybe that's why... I mean, I like Le Chiffre, but it's more so like... I like him as Hannibal better, so... That's what, and
I can get that. But one thing, I don't think we haven't recorded the Skyfall episode, have we? I don't think we did.
Well,
we sort of did.
Oh, true. But I want to bring up, but the second time's better.
Yeah.
the scene, the famous scene where there's a first time for everyone. This is my first. Yeah, people. people laugh at that joke, but I don't think I put it on tape. He's referencing the torture scene in Casino Royale.
That's what everyone.
And it's even more flagrant this time, because after that, Silva says all that physical stuff so passé.
No, that's what we were talking about last night, and I definitely see where you're going, but I also don't think that's what that line is referring to. I think it was just kind of a quick humor line, because like John Logan, the screenwriter, is actually gay, so he wanted to like add that like flamboyance.
It works on multiple levels, but I appreciate that. Like he says, oh, there's nothing. Like he's been trained to endure torture,
yeah.
And now he's being like almost molested by another man.
Yeah.
And that's like, I appreciate Bond's answer. At least you're my first, and it's like it works on multiple levels. That's the brilliant.
And then I think I mean everyone talked about it in 2012, and I think just that because it changed the tone of the entire scene. And, because it was very serious, and then that. Almost kind of gay reference scene, like it's just like
the homoerotic nature of that scene. But it's always, it's a scene that's been in multiple Bond films and always feels a little bit homoerotic, to be honest with you.
Oh, yeah.
And the fact that he dressed in the movie, I thought was brilliant, but also Bond's rent answer was also pitch perfect.
Oh, yeah, so that's, I think, like, that's what John Logan did very brilliantly in Skyfall, is kind of like giving the audience a quick laugh, or like a great laugh in theater, and then.
So like the one time in the whole movie where Bond really surprises Silva. Nothing else Bond does really catches Silva off guard except that one reply. That's kind of funny too.
Yeah.
Also, I like the character of that Baroness Marlowe plays. And she's not in the movie a lot, but there's,
she's an effective actress. I do like her.
She is.
She hasn't done much since then.
I know. I don't know why, because she should have become, like, she should be in a freaking Marvel movie. That's what I'm going to say. All of these people should have had bigger careers. But her, especially, she's not a big part, but she's really effective. You feel for that character.
I can help you.
I don't think so.
Let me try. Bring me to him.
Can you kill him?
Yes.
Will you?
Someone usually dies.
Perhaps you can. When I leave, they're going to kill you. If you survive, I'm on the Chimera. North Harbor. Berth 7. We cast off in an hour. Very nice to have met you, Mr. Bond. Good luck.
But just to add to that is, there used to be something called the Bond girl curse. Like, if you play a Bond girl, then your career kind of dies after that.
That's not really true
anymore. True, because, like, Famke Janssen blossomed like hell.
Terry Hatcher?
Well, she was already big at the time.
I know, but she they survived. It's not the curse. Ali Berry, Eva Green.
But, like,
even Olga Kuryenko.
I think it's not so much, like, I think it's more so, like, if Bond girl was your first, like, big movie, then your career never goes anywhere. But, like, if you were big actress like Sophie Marceau, then you're still going to be.
Evergreen was nobody when she made that.
Her fame took a lot longer to kick off than most people thought it would. Because her movies were kind of like but like she was brilliant in Penny Dreadful. So like it did take some years to.
She's been working nonstop. She was in Sin City. She was in a lot of Tim Burton. Well, I mean, her new career is being Tim Burton's girlfriend.
But that's like that also took like 6-7 years to like kick off. But that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
It didn't happen immediately as people thought it would. But you never know. Like showbiz, like. It's very unpredictable. Like,
so it's their choice. They have to decide what they want to do.
I mean, because like the one that Steven Spielberg was most surprised about, because we talked about Catch Me If You Can and with David Zariski this morning, is because Amy Adams was a nurse girlfriend. And
it's true.
And that came out in 2002. And Amy, and like on paper, yeah, she did a good job. She worked with Steven Spielberg. Spielberg gave her recommendations, but Amy Adams' career didn't take off until like 2009, like when she was in like Enchanted, and then all the blockbusters she's been in since. And I remember, like, in every interview, Spielberg always says, I don't know why Amy Adams' career is not taking off. Like, she was great in my movie, Catch Me If You Can, made a lot of money. And
yeah, no, she.
So that's, I mean, I think it's like.
I've seen her, you know, she was also.
She's very prolific now.
No, but she got her, one of the first thing I've seen her, it's in retrospect, rediscovered, she was in That 70s Show. Like, the second season, she's a guest star.
She?
Yeah, she is. Yeah. It's funny. Like, whoa, that's Amy Adams playing a teenager, and to me, she's like 40-something.
Yeah.
Mom, now.
Even when I see you're younger, I always say she's 40-something.
I mean, good for her, that because I like her, and she's very prolific now. But that just shows the nature of showbiz. Like, you just never know.
Yeah.
And some careers just die in instant, like after like a few hits. Like, look at Sam Worthington. Like, after Avatar, he got a lot of like films, but like.
He became a hit boy, but it never took off.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
The Turner movie they did, the Man on the Ledge. There's something they announced about something about sharks versus whale movie, and that looks like.
He's in it.
Yeah, then I read that in the press release. I'm like, that sounds like the dumbest thing ever.
D-roll. It's a D-roll.
And I don't wish ill on anyone. Just like sometimes these characters. Don't go anywhere, and even if you know he's a working actor, he's gonna work until the day he drops. I don't feel bad for him. It's just that you wish the best for everyone. Like I have no one that I wish they their careers would.
Except for Michael Bay.
I was gonna say no. Not even Michael Bay. The only person that I would say I wish his careers would probably Steven Seagal, because apparently he's a real.
Yeah,
person.
Few things have come out. So.
Yeah,
but even then, like, I know him personally, so I can't. This is not, and he broke Sean Connery's wrist.
Yeah, I was gonna say that too.
to bring it back to Bond. So I mean, as much as it's pleasant seeing you guys and talking about the concert, we do have a plane to catch.
Yes.
But I just got a text on my phone. It's about. It's that hassle, Mr. White. He's always asking you the same questions.
What does he want this time?
He's saying, do you have people everywhere?
No, do you have people everywhere?
Everywhere.
We got the www.thejamesbondcomplex.com. We have Instagram. Search for us at The James Bond Complex. Facebook, The James Bond Complex. Twitter, The Bond Complex. The www also serves as our Tumblr account. Our base of operations, anchor.fm. We're on YouTube now. Search and tickle us with a thumbs up button. And Google Play. We're on Stitcher. Are we on? No, Spotify. We're on Spotify.
We're on Spotify.
And on iTunes. Search for The James Bond Complex. Subscribe to The James Bond Complex. Write a review.
I think it's called the Apple Store now.
Apple Store. And give us. Can they still give 5-star glowing golden gun reviews?
I don't know. I'm assuming yes. We'll say yes.
Give us a 5-star glowing golden gun review. We're all individually online. Jason, where are you?
I'm on Instagram, JASXON88.
Matthew?
I'm on Instagram at MattAuclair007 and also a little bit on Twitter at MattAuclair.
I'm on Twitter at 00pop, the words OOH_. And just as James Bond always returns, very soon, by the time this comes out, Time to Die, just a few weeks away.
And by the time, normally we're doing another debriefing next weekend, right?
Don't know what we'll talk about.
Well, there's a billion things we didn't discuss.
Posters. We'll find stuff. The watches, you know, we're fine. We'll be fine next week. So just as James Bond returns, just as James Bond returns, so too will the James Bond Complex. Merci et à la prochaine.
Au revoir.
Au revoir.
England, the Empire, MI6. You're living in a ruin as well. You just don't know it yet.